ever had Lyme disease, maybe even more than once. I have a friend who did. We are going to discuss the prevention and treatment of Lyme disease as the spring weather is bringing out the culprit, the deer tick. And there are reports that this could be a big year for ticks and Lyme disease. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are going to talk about how to prevent, how to treat Lyme disease. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest expert. And we do want to know if you've ever had Lyme disease and what it was like for you. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Amish Adalja, an infectious disease physician and senior associate at Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. He blogs at trackingzebra.com and was recently quoted in a Self article, which was titled, Lyme Disease Cases Have Tripled in 20 Years. Here's How to Stay Safe. Good morning. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So a new prediction says 2017 and 2018 will see major Lyme disease outbreaks in new areas. What's your reaction to this?
I've been expecting to see this kind of explosion of Lyme disease for several different reasons. We've seen over the last several decades, when Lyme was first discovered in the 1970s, that the reach of the tick that spreads it has increased from basically the eastern seaboard all the way even now into the Midwest. And so that's going to get more people infected. The other thing is the awareness of Lyme disease is very, very high. We've had several prominent celebrities talk about Lyme disease. We've had a lot of people in communities that have been infected with Lyme disease. So doctors have become much more attuned to the risk of Lyme disease in our testing, and sometimes probably in settings where people shouldn't be tested for Lyme disease, they're being tested for Lyme disease. So that increased testing is picking up a lot of cases. And I think that the third reason is that we've seen that this tick also feeds on other animals, particularly mice and rodents, and we've seen explosions in those populations, which usually is a harbinger for a bad Lyme year.
Yeah. And Dr. Adalja, we're having a little bit of difficulty hearing you. I'm going to ask if you can speak directly and loudly into your mouthpiece, and hopefully we'll be able to pick up more words than we are. If not, we'll call you back to see if we can shake out any gremlins in the phone line. But why don't I just have you describe what exactly is Lyme disease?
Lyme disease is an infectious disease that was really first discovered in the United States in the 1970s after a cluster of children in Connecticut and Lyme, Connecticut had unexplained arthritis symptoms. And what it is it's an infection that you get through the bite of a tick, a special kind of a tick, the deer tick. And that tick can transmit this bacteria through its bite. And it doesn't happen instantaneously. It takes more than 24 hours for the bacteria to make its way from the tick into your blood. And what it does is it goes through several different stages, and in the very beginning, you may or may not have a bullseye rash, which is a very characteristic rash of Lyme disease, and then after that, the bacteria can move to different parts of your body, including your joints, your brain, your heart, and can cause a wide variety of symptoms, and in certain cases, it can also cause late-stage symptoms, such as bad arthritis or chronic brain infection. But the good thing about Lyme disease, although its cases are exploding, is that it's treatable in all of its stages by standard courses of antibiotics. And that's really been how we've controlled Lyme disease from the beginning, is getting people diagnosed and putting them on the appropriate antibiotic therapy.
Yeah. Are there any myths or misconceptions that you can share about Lyme disease?
There are many misconceptions about Lyme disease, and I think that's because, you know, one, it's a relatively new infectious disease, at least new to science from the 1970s, but that's given us a lot of time to learn a lot. But there's been surprises along the way, like there have been with many different infectious diseases. And I think the biggest misconception is that once someone has completed treatment for Lyme disease and they may have lingering symptoms that are kind of vague, such as difficulty concentrating, aches and pains, sleep disturbances, not really thinking clearly, that is the result of residual infection or some hideaway of the bacteria that's not being, well, that wasn't reached by the antibiotics. And then what ends up happening is these patients go and see usually non-infectious disease physicians and get placed on long-term antibiotics, which really have been shown in multiple clinical studies to not have any impact on these symptoms. And it's not that academic medicine has turned their back on these patients. It's just that it's not antibiotics that are the answer. That we don't quite understand why certain people, after they've been treated adequately for Lyme disease, the bacteria is gone from their body. There's no signs that the immune system is active against anything at that point, have these lingering symptoms. And it may have to do with their genetics. And it's not something that we want people to be on long-term antibiotics, because, you know, that's a whole other discussion, all of the complications you can get with breeding antibiotic-resistant bacteria and side effects. But I think that's the biggest myth, is this post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome and what that it can be cured with long-term antibiotics or hyperbaric oxygen therapy or lots of different other things that people are trying on these individuals.
I'm going to bring in to the conversation David in Cable, who I believe thinks he has been suffering for a long time from Lyme disease. David, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a diagnostic Lyme disease carditis.
And I'm sorry, what did you say you have? David, I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. What did you say?
Long-term, I have Lyme's carditis, Lyme-related carditis.
Okay.
And which is when Lyme disease affects the heart. And the only relief I have received is from long-term antibiotics. As soon as I go off the antibiotic, my heart does all kinds of strange and nasty things to me. I think your physician is in the field with the other major medical physicians and...
Well, because I know there are, I don't want this hour to turn into a debate over what some people call chronic Lyme disease, but have you heard of this carditis side effect of Lyme disease, Dr.?
Certainly, Lyme, like I said before, after the first early stage, Lyme can then, what we say, disseminate or go to different parts of the body. And one place it can go is to the heart, and it can affect the heart itself, and it can also affect the electrical system that sets the pace of your heart. And people can get heart rhythm disturbances and can get heart infection. But again, these initially are going to be treated with a course of antibiotics. And it's not to say that this man's symptoms aren't there, that his heart hasn't been permanently damaged by Lyme disease. That could be true. But the question that we have is, is the bacteria still present in his heart tissue or in his body? And that's when you would need antibiotic treatment. And there's a lot of people who swear by and rely on this long-term antibiotic therapy for Lyme disease, and it really has never been shown to do anything. And a lot of people anecdotally say that they only feel good or they only feel better when it's on, and as soon as the antibiotics stop, this stuff flares. And, there are major placebo effects that are likely occurring here, because we've seen in randomized controlled trials where they do this, it does not show any benefit, and it's important that we distinguish that we're not belittling people's symptoms. It's just that these symptoms aren't treated with long-term antibiotics, and there needs to be more investigation on what's different about these people's genetic makeup that allows them to have these prolonged symptoms versus somebody that has a short course and gets and then is completely free of Lyme disease. And there may be other things going on there that need to be addressed.
Yeah, hasn't the CDC recognized that there is some, I don't know, post-treatment side effects that need to be researched more?
Yeah, definitely. If you even look at the CDC's Lyme disease page, they have a section there talking about the fact that people do have symptoms after the fact, and that's not something that is Lyme disease, so that's something different. And they've got they actually have a video there that they put, because it's really become a problem, because there are so many practitioners there that are prescribing long-term antibiotics really without any concern for the consequences of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, side effects. Sometimes these patients actually have to have long-term IVs put in, which can get infected. There just is a lot of a lot of stuff going on here. And then sometimes these therapies can even range to things like hyperbaric oxygen therapy, where people are basically going in a dive tank, and that's never been shown to have any benefit, and that's very expensive. It's often paid for out of pocket because insurance companies, rightly so, don't pay for these procedures because they're not evidence-based. And that's why the CDC has been trying to really get people to stick to what's in the Infectious Disease Society of America guidelines, which are evidence-based guidelines on how to treat Lyme disease. But it doesn't mean that we stop at the same time looking to understand why this group of people have lingering symptoms that aren't from the bacteria, but maybe from something else that's going on there.
Our guest is Dr. Amish Adalja, infectious disease physician, senior associate at Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, talking with us about the very latest regarding Lyme disease. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We'll get back to our conversation about Lyme disease in just a moment, but this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive, and Bill Martins joins me because your support is an essential piece of the funding for the Joy Cardine Show, for all the programs that you enjoy on WPR. This drive is your time to take action. Become a WPR contributor at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Joy, we're looking for 9 pledges in the next 35 minutes to stay on track this hour. Your support keeps WPR strong, and it helps pay for the Joy Cardine Show. So please make that gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is turning 100 years old this year. It's a time to reflect on all the amazing stories and conversations and inspiring music that you have enjoyed. And all of the discussions that you hear on this program and how you learn about things like Lyme disease. So your contribution makes that possible.
And it's fun to imagine, you know, what the next memorable moment will be. I can tell you this, though. It's only going to be possible with your support. When you give, you have an impact on WPR every day. So make your centennial gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you are looking for the best way to make a gift to WPR, becoming a sustaining member is a good one. As a sustainer, you'll make automatic monthly contributions from your credit card or your bank account.
A lot of people give $15 a month on this plan. Some give $100. You know, the amount is totally up to you. As a sustainer, you'll be an ongoing member of WPR, building a stable source of revenue for your favorite radio station. So contribute right now, become a sustainer at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now let's admit it, sometimes we spend money on silly things.
I spent money at a silent auction thinking I wouldn't win, and I did, and I won art. That was honestly a little creepy.
1976 MGB, that hasn't run in 20 years. I regret it, and I see it every day in my garage, and I regret it even more.
From creepy art to lemon cars, we've all made questionable decisions about how we spend our money. So it might be time to make a few smart ones. You can start by supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is the single largest source of funding at WPR, so make a sound investment with your gift to WPR right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins, asking for your support of WPR during this spring membership drive. You get to decide how much to contribute. Maybe your gift is $10 a month or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
You've made the decision to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make the decision to support WPR financially. It's as simple as that. You really can help. So join, renew, or make an extra gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as this pledge drive continues, you can do more with your gift to WPR. You can ask to plant a tree in our centennial forest as your gift when you pledge $5 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're a sustaining member, thank you very much. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 a month. or whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill. We are still looking for 9 pledges to make our goal this hour. You can help out by making your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. So let's get back to our conversation about Lyme disease. It's apparently set to be a big year for Lyme disease, and we're talking about why that is. We're talking about what we can do about it. We're welcoming your questions for our guest expert, Dr. Amish Adalja, infectious disease physician, senior associate at Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. He was recently quoted in an article in Self, which was titled, Lyme Disease Cases Have Tripled in 20 Years. Here's How to Stay Safe. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go back to the phones. John in Madison is with us. Hi, John.
Good morning. I understand the lab tests are unreliable in the early phase of the disease, and I just wondered how long it usually takes before they turn positive and you can count on them. My other question is, roughly 20% of the people that present with this disease, that bullseye rash, don't have the bullseye rash. And I'm just, it's been advocated by some that one dose of doxycycline will prevent symptoms. Do you advise going that route if they have a documented tick bite?
Dr. Adalja?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that the caller is talking about is the test that we use for Lyme disease. And it is true that, you know, A, not everybody will have that rash. That's one thing. And that the rash is something that we use. We don't even test when we see the rash because, you know, 70 to 80% of people will have that special bullseye rash at the tick bite. But sometimes they may not notice it, and then some group that doesn't have it. So if you've got that rash, then you just automatically treat for it. The other issue is that, you know, it is in the very early stages, the two-stage test that we do, is you can miss cases. So, for example, the first several weeks of infection, about 30, you're not going to see everybody coming positive. So obviously you'd want to wait to test somebody. You wouldn't expect it to be positive immediately just because of it takes a while for the immune system to rev up and make antibodies against this bacteria. So because of that, you basically have to either treat clinically if somebody has it, or you have to make a decision or repeat the test in several weeks to make sure that it is positive, because it's not something that the immune system takes some time to rev up. And there are two different ways that you can test for different antibodies. There's an early antibody and a late antibody, and the early one will start to come up in a couple of weeks. And because of that, the CDC and others are working with trying to develop better tests that are more sensitive in the early stage. And there is some work being done, and there's been some academic papers trying to improve our diagnostic testing algorithm so that you don't miss these early cases. But again, the rash is what we can, if someone has the rash, there's no need to be testing. You can just treat. But if they don't have the rash, it can get a little difficult, and you can just repeat the test a couple of weeks later, and it should turn positive if someone has Lyme. The caller also asked about if someone giving the antibiotic doxycycline prophylactically, if someone has a tick bite, and that's something that has been shown in the paper to be able to prevent Lyme disease when it's done. But there's a couple different caveats that I do. I do sometimes give that to patients, and sometimes I don't. And when I do give it to them, it's when we're in an area that has Lyme disease, so it's a place that you know that there is a really prevalent amount of bacteria in the ticks, and that the tick is something that resembles the actual deer tick, that it is that you can sometimes people will bring those in and you can look at them and you can compare them to pictures of what the actual Lyme disease tick is, because there's lots of different ticks. You want to make sure it's actually the Lyme tick that spread the Lyme. And remember, this doesn't happen instantaneously. The tick has to be attached to your body for several 24 hours for that to happen. And then I think you can meet the criteria to get this pill. Otherwise, it's not really going to do much benefit, and doxycycline is a drug that can sometimes cause people to have nausea, vomiting, and skin sensitivity, so we don't want to over-treat people with it, but it is an option you can use when people meet the criteria I just outlined.
What advice do you have for people to prevent Lyme disease?
The biggest thing you have to really do is avoid tick exposure. And the one thing that's good about Lyme disease, in a sense, is that the tick doesn't give you the bacteria within minutes or seconds or even hours. Like I said, it takes about 24 hours of attachment for the tick to transmit the bacteria. So because of that, if you can do tick inspections of your body every 24 hours, you should be able to theoretically prevent yourself from getting Lyme disease. But you have to look in places like your armpits, in the groin, in your scalp, places where ticks like to hide, and then remove those ticks from your body. And if you do that every day, these tick inspections, you can really limit your risk of getting Lyme disease. Also, when you go into areas that have ticks that are known to spread ticks, if you wear appropriate clothing, that, for example, tucking your pants into your socks and making sure your waistband is not accessible to ticks, and also wearing tick repellent or spraying your clothes with tick repellents, all of those things can help you to do that. But it's hard. I know in your pledge drive you're talking about planting trees, and that's what one of the things that happened is lots of people live in forested lots where there's a lot of exposure to ticks in their backyard, and that's one other trend that's really increased the reach of Lyme disease into people, is that people live in areas where even before you have to go maybe in the woods or go to the park to be exposed to ticks, but sometimes people are exposed in their backyard because they have a very wooded backyard, or they live in a housing plan that was once a forest, and there are a lot of rodents and lots of ticks along with them.
Mark from Wisconsin Dells called in to say, I had a series of three shots for Lyme disease 15 years ago. Under the assumption, I believe, that this was a vaccination, and wants to know, is my vaccine no good, invalid? Was this a real vaccine? There was a vaccine some time ago, Dr. Adalja, but it was taken off the market as far as I understand. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so there was a vaccine, your caller is right, that there was a vaccine against Lyme disease, and it was something that was a really novel vaccine. It actually, the antibodies in your blood would get sucked up into the tick and tear the bacteria inside the tick. And it was released and it was marketed for a while. I believe it was called Lymerix. And what happened was there wasn't a big market for it. People weren't buying it. And because of that, the company withdrew it from the market because it wasn't something that they were able to really recoup their investment on and find a viable market for. And that's kind of unfortunate because I think if this were to be introduced now, you'd probably see much market demand. But in the interim, what people have been doing is trying to develop better vaccines and improve on this vaccine. But yes, it was a valid vaccine. It was FDA approved, and then it was removed basically because no one was buying it. And I think this was really a bad situation because now the disease surveillance has gotten so much better that we really see the true burden of Lyme. Lyme has become one of a top infectious disease concern of the general public. You probably find a lot more people willing to take that to get that vaccine now than they were when it was out several years ago.
Yeah, they'd be breaking down the door. So how far away do you think we might be from a good vaccine that I guess will pay for its investment?
You have to remember that vaccine development is moving decades and years and not necessarily months. So this wasn't something, after one company has a bad experience where they're not able to really sell their vaccine, it is it's going to kind of make a lot of people shy away from it because one company wasn't able to be successful. It just really kind of poisons the whole environment. But there is a second generation of vaccine that's being tried in Europe, for example. But I couldn't really put a time scale on it because this is something that takes a long period of time, especially since they're now trying a second-generation vaccine and not going back to the old one that was there in the past. So I would say it's probably years away before we would see a Lyme disease vaccine in the United States.
We will talk more about Lyme disease, preventing and treating Lyme disease, with our guest, Dr. Amish Adalja, who is with John Hopkins. And we are welcoming your questions for him and your own experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. But before we get back to Lyme disease, let's talk about spring membership drive. Bill Martins joins me as we are in our spring membership drive, and we are hoping for your support. Now is the time for you to put a value on this program and everything else you hear on WPR by making a gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 9 more pledges in the next 20 minutes. Give to WPR to support the station you love, your public radio. And a big thank you if you have already given. If you haven't, help pay for the programs you enjoy by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You have been enjoying our conversation about Lyme disease. Well, I don't know if you're enjoying it, but you're listening because our lines are full and we will get to your questions in just a moment. It's an example of the important and helpful advice that you get from this program every day.
Absolutely. Now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So you might spend a few dollars a month on TV streaming or movie subscription services. Think about paying for your WPR usage that way. After all, you tune in probably every day for information and entertainment.
If you've never given before, start with a gift of $5 or $10 a month. That's, you know, on par with your Netflix subscription, maybe even a better deal. It's easy to set up. Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, in light of many news stories on Lyme disease during this time of year and predictions that Lyme disease will explode, that it could be a banner year for Lyme disease, we are talking about how to prevent and how to treat Lyme disease with our guest expert. Very happy to have with us Dr. Amish Adalja, who is an infectious disease physician and senior associate at Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Kyle in Dodgeville is with us. Hi, Kyle.
Hi. I had Lyme disease probably 6-7 years ago. I still get aches and pains. Especially when I run a fever or something, it feels like I'm almost dying, I'd say. And I was just wondering if there's any recommendations on what I can do to ease the pain.
Well, and you're pretty sure, Kyle, this is because of the Lyme disease, or maybe it could be because of something else?
I guess no, I don't know if it's from something else. I always assumed it was from the Lyme disease. I've heard that the pain can linger.
Yeah, can the pain linger, Dr. Adalja?
Yes, pain can linger, and that's kind of what we were talking about, that there is this group of individuals who have this post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome. So, you know, in this particular case, I would want to go back and make sure first that the Lyme disease was accurately diagnosed and that it was accurately treated. And then you may want to do some follow-up testing just to make sure that there is nothing going on, because there's a lot of autoimmune disease, things like rheumatoid arthritis and similar conditions that may cause joint swelling and pain episodically, like he's describing. And because he might have had a condition of Lyme disease in the past, there's a tendency to try and ascribe those symptoms to Lyme. But I would really, if the patient was treated appropriately, I would really urge him to get this checked out to make sure there's not something else going on. And, you know, there are, you know, painkillers and anti-inflammatories that you can take, but I would advise him to see his physician and have his physician evaluate him and look over the old Lyme disease, as well as try and investigate whether there might be another condition responsible for these symptoms, because it's not normal to have these symptoms after adequate treatment for Lyme.
Kelsey on Facebook says, treatment for Lyme is so difficult, especially if it's delayed because the signs, symptoms are missed or misdiagnosed. Well, first of all, are the signs and symptoms of Lyme disease often missed or misdiagnosed?
It depends on how you define it. The rash is very characteristic, that bullseye rash, and that's not often missed if you're seen by a healthcare provider. People really associate that with Lyme disease.
But the thing is, some people may not notice the rash or they may not have the rash. And then they may present at a later stage with, for example, meningitis or heart rhythm problems or joint pain or some other type of symptoms. And there, it, you know, the physician really has to think, what is this patient's risk for Lyme disease, and then order the test. And then it doesn't mean that the treatment is more difficult. It might be a little bit longer than it would have been in the past. So, for example, if you catch somebody at the rash, the bullseye rash stage, you may be able to treat for 10 or 14 days with oral antibiotics. But if that's missed and now it's affecting the heart or the brain and causing meningitis, for example, you may need to treat for a course of maybe 4 weeks with IV antibiotics. But doesn't mean that treatment isn't really prolonged. I think that sometimes people think that you have to be on antibiotics for life with Lyme disease, and that's not true. And you can diagnose Lyme disease in all of its stages if you test for it, but it's important that you only test when people have compatible symptoms. And a lot of people who are frustrated with Lyme disease treatment get tested because they kind of have these very vague symptoms that really aren't consistent with Lyme disease, but somebody decides to send a test, and maybe they had Lyme in the past or the test is a false positive, and then they get put on a Lyme disease treatment, and their symptoms don't go away because it was never really Lyme disease to begin with, and then they blame the antibiotics aren't working, they need to switch antibiotics, need more antibiotics. All of these types of scenarios occur because the diagnosis wasn't made appropriately in the first place. So I wouldn't say that if it's missed, the treatment is hard. It's still, even if it's diagnosed in a later stage, the treatment is still going to be standard course antibiotics, which may be prolonged for maybe 4 weeks. There may be an intravenous component to them as well, but it's not going to be antibiotics for life or for months and months.
Yeah. So typically, I do spend a lot of time outdoors. Luckily, I've taken wood ticks off of me. I don't remember ever seeing a deer tick on me or had to pull a deer tick off me. Never had the bullseye. I've never had what I believe are symptoms of Lyme disease. So I think I'm pretty lucky. It seems to me that half the people in Wisconsin have had this, it seems. But anyway, let's say I didn't see a tick biting me. I never saw a rash. What would I be experiencing if I had Lyme disease?
Well, most likely you would start. You'd kind of skipping a stage, so you wouldn't get that early localized infection stage. You'd be basically jumping to what we call the disseminated infection stage, which what happens usually, you know, several days to weeks after the bite. And there you might have a different type of rash. You might have red eyes. You might have not feeling well, fever, headache, you might have achiness, your lymph nodes may swell, you could have a headache, you could have neck pain, lots of different vague type of, they aren't quite vague, but they're clearly something is sick that's not, there's more than just kind of vague symptoms going on, because you do have a fever, you may have a rash, you may have a headache, your neck might be stiff, you could have some pain in your joints, and then basically that's where you can get tested, and then you would be positive by the standard test at that point. But that's what doctors should know. When someone comes in with actual symptoms of fever, chills, that kind of thing, in an area where Lyme disease is present, then you have to think, could this be disseminated Lyme disease? And that's when testing should be done.
Yeah. And typically that the short-term antibiotics will take care of it for most people?
Right. Most people can just be treated with a 14-day course of antibiotics by mouth or oral pills. However, you know, for some of the other types, if you have it in, you know, chronic arthritis or if it's in your brain, that type of thing, you will treat people with IV antibiotics up to about 28 days. So that's still not a very long course of treatment. So it's not that what we see in some of these patients who have post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome, some practitioners are prescribing people antibiotics for 3 months or for lifetime, or they're always on antibiotics. That's not really supported by the evidence and the science behind Lyme disease.
Yeah. Eric in Beloit is with us. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I just had a quick question. Are there other ways to, other vectors that can give you Lyme disease other than a tick bite?
There really hasn't been anything that's there may be laboratory experiments where they've been able to inoculate it in different ways, but it's really the deer tick
in the eastern part of the United States, a separate tick called Ixodes pacificus is its species name, its genus and species name that spread it on the west coast. But really, that's the primary mechanism by which people are getting infected in the United States is through the tick, and that's why all our efforts are really focused on limiting tick exposure.
Yeah, there are other tick-borne diseases. Are they kind of similar to? Similar to Lyme disease, but there are different ticks that carry different diseases.
Right. There are different ticks that carry different diseases. For example, Rocky Mountain spotted fever is caused by a different type of tick. But the other thing is this deer tick not only can transmit Lyme, it can transmit diseases like ehrlichiosis or anaplasmosis, babesiosis, the virus Powassan virus, all of those can also be transmitted by the bite of a deer tick. So it's not just that you're preventing Lyme disease by limiting your exposure. It's all of these other diseases. And there's even other related bacteria that aren't Lyme that are transmitted. Even in Wisconsin, you have something called Borrelia mayoni, which is the bacterial name for Lyme disease is Borrelia burgdorferi, but there is another form called Borrelia mayoni, which they've seen in Wisconsin, for example. So that's also something that doctors in have to be attuned to, that it may not be Lyme disease that's been transmitted by a tick, but it could be one of these other infections, and those often have overlapping symptoms. Some of them may be more severe, most of them more severe than Lyme disease, but they do have some overlapping symptoms, so you have to think about testing for those diseases in the right clinical context as well.
And let's try Rachel in Peshtigo. Hi, Rachel.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have been a horse owner for many years, and worming is something that we have to do several times a year. And one of the wormers we use is ivermectin. And I came across some information in a couple publications that ivermectin had been shown to basically keep the tick from being able to latch on, therefore interrupting, you know, that they have that 24 hours to transmit the bacteria, but basically that was prevented. And I know ivermectin is a worming medication also used in people, and I just haven't been able to find much information about that. I've read it a couple places, but nowhere else, and I was wondering if you could speak to that.
Well, that would be different.
Well, ivermectin is a drug that's kind of a breakthrough drug that has been really important in controlling parasitic diseases in all kinds of species, including in humans. And we even use it for lice. It can be used to treat lice in humans as well. So it does have an effect on the other species, particularly things like lice and ticks, where it can paralyze them and cause them to fall off. It affects their nervous system. So that's something that we would use. So I think it's something that probably does have biological activity against ticks, but it's hard to think about how you might give that to somebody. You'd probably have to have them on all the time for it to really have an effect on ticks' attachment, so that the blood levels are so high in you that it wouldn't allow the tick to attach. And that really exposes people to a lot of side effects, and the cost may be very prohibitive. And again, it's not something that probably has a good case for use, even though it probably would work biologically, because remember, it takes at least 24 hours for this bacteria to transmit between tick to human. So you would probably find people be fine if people would do meticulous tick inspections, at least to prevent Lyme. Some of the other diseases may spread a little bit quicker, but again, I think it's probably not going to be worth the side effects to do that. But it is something that you know, people probably will experiment with as people get more attuned to the risk of Lyme disease, and it may be something that you might hear more about. But in my mind, I can't think of a way that it would be used effectively.
So David on Facebook says, pull your socks up over your pant cuffs, wear plenty of DEET, no guarantee, but that helps. Good advice?
Yeah, I agree. That's basically the primary means we have of preventing Lyme disease until we have a new vaccine, is to really take care of yourself so that you don't allow the ticks to find open skin for them to attach to.
And then tick check after you get back from inside every 24 hours? Oh, I think we might have lost our guest. But thank you very much, Dr. Amish Adalja, infectious disease physician, senior associate at Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Thanks to Naisha Ellison for producing this program. I know that she's horrified of ticks, so I appreciate it. And Bill Martins joins me now with not so horrifying news, Bill.
No, but we do need 7 more pledges in the next 5 minutes or so to reach that hourly goal. Your gift right now is so important. Support the programs you depend on every day. A big thank you if you have already given. If you haven't, the time is now at WDPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, we learned a lot and got some good information during this hour. Lots of people interested in Lyme disease, preventing and treating Lyme disease in Wisconsin, as it is a hot spot. And Eleanor in Madison pledged and says, WPR is my main news source. So
good.
Thank you very much for that. You can join her at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, on this program, on the Joy Cardine Show, you hear policymakers and politicos answer questions on a wide variety of state, national, and international topics.
On Mondays, we have the State Capitol Report. We cover legislative sessions, state elections, state budget issues, the state Supreme Court, and more. Every Tuesday, we talk money matters with Kevin McKinley.
We've got the Week in Review on Friday. We cover a lot of ground every week, and you're a part of that as a listener, a caller, and a contributor. Support this valuable source of information and access to great guests with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, and coming up, we have a special midweek Week in Review. Mm-hmm. We'll have two guests from different perspectives talking about a number of important issues in the news already this week, so we'll welcome your views on that that budget deal that averted a shutdown, and President Trump saying that maybe we need a good shutdown in September, and much more. That's coming up in our next hour. Pledge, because these conversations are valuable to you, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're really getting down to the wire here. Just about a minute and change left. We're looking for 6 more pledges to reach that goal, and you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I want you to plant a tree in our centennial forest. It's going to be, I asked, where is this thing going to be? It's going to be in near Osseo.
Correct.
In west central Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So the $5 a month pledge is the pledge if you'd like to plant a tree in our centennial forest at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.